Hey everyone, you're now part of the B2B Power Hour, and I'm your host, Nicholas Thicket.
I'm Morgan Smith. We help sales professionals power up their sales skills from first touch to revenue, 1 hour at a time.
Join us for weekly live shows and interviews with industry experts breaking down what works and what doesn't in the remote sales era.
Now, on to today's episode. It's really funny. We did an episode a number of months ago on April Fools about the common things people screw up. And we thought it was time to chat about some of the common things we continue to see persisting despite our best efforts when sellers are using social for prospecting. And can we get the first one out of the way, Nick, really quick? Because it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I got one of those yesterday and it was like, oh, didn't even see that coming.
The pitch slap. The connect and pitch. They are magnificently bad now. Like, I think they've amped up. Whatever sellers doing the connect and pitches or doing the in-mails that have just like a novel length pitch, they've really turned up their game. Like, it used to be a paragraph and now it's like five paragraphs.
That's like the super scroll and you're like... Yeah. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
I got one the other day and they like did this whole like butter me up thing. And they're like, hey, I really love what you do. And, you know, it really means a lot to me. I'd love to sell you lead gen services. And it's like,
oh, my God.
Are we, when you say you love what I do, I love the way you bullshit to me? Like,
yeah.
Like, but I think this is the biggest issue is like there's this huge disconnect on what social is and why it works. And could you imagine if people took this mentality to networking like we talked about yesterday?
Oh.
Like people just get punched out. Like they'd go to go in there and like do their drive-by business carding and people be laying on the floor like,
yeah.
I know COVID's been a long time, but like you've lost your humanity.
But you're so right. I think the reason that this is a mistake in our eyes, here's the thing. There's going to be 1% of your total market, which I love to call your Princess Leia leads, the people who are like, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope, speaking of Star Wars, that would be open to a highly formulated, well-crafted connection request with, as a spear, basically, which is a like cold outbound, like a really well-formulated email. I know, Nick, your favorite template is observation, insight, question. Justin Michaels has his own many different ones that, yeah, he uses to craft spears. But basically, there's going to be a very, very, very small percentage of all of the people you could interact with based on your insights of the market and the prospect and the account and the timing and the triggers and everything else that says, yes, I should send this. But I think the problem is everybody inverts that and says, oh, you mean I can do that to 99% of my market?
But I think this is the problem with, it's funny, we are literally just talking about this. People realize that they could buy a machine gun in America and they're like, hey, I'm not very good at hunting. So why don't I just buy a machine gun and I'll just shoot everything that moves? And I think this is the mentality we have to change is that we need to be patient and we need to reverse the role on social, at least, that we're being patient on how we're approaching people. And in all reality, people assume you're going to pitch them, and it's a delightful surprise when you don't. And so if you look for ways to warm up the account with conversation first, it is honestly an incredible way to stand out, and it doesn't take that long. You can't treat social like email or cold calling. It's not instant gratification. Slow your roll. I don't care what your managers are telling you, they're wrong. Slow your roll, take your time, and it doesn't take that long because the thing about social is it compounds. Conversations I'm having now spool up. You know what people don't do? They don't go, you know that email, that like really selfish email, which leads into number two, that wasn't a problem that I have and probably never will. You know that, yeah, like 6 months ago when that person like hit me with that, I need to go and find it in my spam folder because now it's relevant and now I need to go reach out to them.
Obviously, that's not happening.
But on social, if somebody was like, you know, I've been really following that Will Allred guy, and like I hadn't really wanted to invest in email, but now I really do, and I feel like Lavender would be perfect for us right now, so that we're getting the most out of email. That happens,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't with email. Like, you can't take that email approach. You're building a brand. You're building up your credibility in the market. You're getting to earn trust. That is why it works.
Yeah. So mistake number one, the pitch slap. And the closely related cousin is mistake number two. But this one, I think, shows up in lots of ways. This isn't just about pitching people. Mistake number two is only talking about yourself.
Those are my favorite too.
Otherwise known as the me syndrome. Like,
hey, Morgan.
Yeah.
I strategically partner with my customers. We are ranked number one in the bullshit awards. And we're the fifth time coming on my quota crusher days. And I would love to go and sell you stuff that you have no business buying. Take this moment that I am giving to you, to buy this free meeting that I am extending to you. You know, once a $5,000 value, now free for you in this moment. Take it or leave it.
Needless to say, that is not great. I think this mentality is the easiest to see when you get a bad pitch, but I think it's a little subtler when we go to engagement strategies. And if you're showing up in somebody else's comments, if you're posting content, if you're engaging with other people, and you're only ever talking about yourself, you're doing it wrong. And I mean that in a really blunt way, because the best kinds of content, and there's a reason LinkedIn's algorithm promotes this, the best kinds of content are the content that brings in other people, right? One of the comment plays we have, we call the tag team comment, which is when you're tagging in somebody else to extend the conversation because it's worthwhile. And it doesn't have to be a prospect. Sometimes it is. It could just be a partner, a peer, a friend that you're tagging into the conversation to keep it going. And if you're only making your content about yourself, if you're only sharing, you know, me, people usually tune that out. There are some exceptions. You can do it right. If you have great marketing, it can help. But if you're not talking about what other people are doing, if you're not focused on, wow, that's such a great insight. You know, that reminds me of this post I saw, or yeah, I was just reading this research paper from this other company that reminds me of this. And you bring that into the conversation. It shifts the tables from being all about me to being about the conversation we're having. And I just happen to be a participant in it. It's like being generous. You're showing up generously. You're adding value. And it doesn't always have to be about you, basically.
I always say it wrong, but it's like, first you must be interested in order to be interesting.
Yes.
Did I get it right this time?
I think so. I think that's the right way to formulate it.
Yes. 17th time's a charm. But it really is that simple. When you're having a conversation, we've all been to those family reunions or all been to those weddings where we're sitting there talking to someone. And they're like, I am amazing. I did this. Or my favorite too is whenever I have a cousin like this, that you're in a conversation, they always have to one-up you to be the star of the show. And you're like, It's like that the TikTok that you guys said. Yeah, I'll be leaving now. Why? I have like anything and everything else that I need to do other than talking to you. Have a nice day.
And like, this is an obvious mistake when we see it. But I think it's a less obvious mistake when we do it. And I'm guilty of this. I think we both are. We've all had conversations where we accidentally talk about ourselves too much, or we don't ask them questions. We don't keep the conversation going. We only ever like talk, you know, it's my chance to shine. That's a fine impulse. However, it is also important, as Nick said, that you're trying to connect with somebody out on social. You're trying to build a meaningful relationship. And if you wouldn't say the things you're saying over a coffee house, or we call it coffee house rules, so over a cafe table, don't say it on LinkedIn. Like,
it's honestly the best test. Like, yeah. I cannot this is, if you want to know if your pitch is good,
Yeah.
Go take a friend out for coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Start at 30 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, and see if you can keep them entertained and make them lean in, because they trust you. They like you. Obviously, they remember you because they picked up your phone call or your text message. That's an earned right.
Yep.
Go and pitch them and see if they're bought in, if it's intriguing enough for them. Because if it's not intriguing for your friends, especially if you pick somebody that's kind of in that wheelhouse, that they'll give you good feedback, that's a good sign. And I have failed this one miserably.
I was about to say,
I'm speaking from experience. Like, I've done with a few friends, and you can see like the eyes rolling in the back of their head. And I'm like, really? Is it that bad?
It's that bad. Yeah.
I had one friend in the middle of a conversation switch from coffee to beer.
Oh, wow. So, you must have really messed that one up. Goodness.
I'm just glad it wasn't recorded.
Yeah. But the reason that I think we maintain coffeehouse rules is because it's also a competitive advantage. If you think about the spam artists on LinkedIn, they're going to over-professionalize. They're going to use marketing jargon. They're going to use the terminology in the industry that's all, you know, here's how great and special we are. And if instead you approach every conversation by being interested in order to be interesting, and you're having a genuine conversation, it's really impactful. I have a quick story before we get to number three. And I, high credit. So I got a pitch in my inbox. It actually wasn't a pitch in my inbox, but it felt like a pitch. So my mental spam filter, I was like, I don't know where he's going. He was asking questions or something. But it was sent on a cadence where I was sort of like, I think this is automated. Because it kept on like following up one. In a specific way. And so Nick and I's favorite tactic on automation sequences is just to send a GIF back. And each of us have our favorite GIFs. Mine is the monkey puppet that's like looking to the side. So I sent a different GIF back that time, but he actually responded with a GIF in response.
And it was a good one.
And it was a really, really good one. And so it could have been automation, right? The initial sequence. But that is an example where, he's actually like connecting. I wouldn't recommend the sequence that he was using to like actually go into an account, but it was like such a good moment where I was like, he gets it. He understands that we're here to have maybe a little bit of fun, and we can connect with people as if we're having a conversation instead of trying to be so buttoned up
the heart.
And yeah, straight laced all the time. Anyways, so that's mistake number two, only talking about yourself.
I think Marcus really nailed number three. Please don't pitch your services in the comments of someone else's post. Or another one I'm just going to throw in there, because it's also another. What did Jen Allen posted about this the other day? Don't be like a LinkedIn asshole.
Yeah.
where you grandstand somebody in their comments, or you go and tell them they're wrong and you don't give any feedback. It's like, sir, ma'am, you know, you could have just ignored this instead of having to add your opinion that was irrelevant and not useful.
Yes.
Just adds no credibility. It doesn't add any value to you. It actually just damages your reputation.
Agreed.
A LinkedIn asshole.
It's insane. So mistake number three is pitching without being asked, which around here we like to call the vampire sales rule. Nick, would you like to explain?
This is one of those weird stumble upon things that we learned going through this experience that should not work as well as it works. And it started out as a game, because I noticed that whenever you'd pitch someone, because back in the day that used to work, where you would just kind of hit them, you'd not quite pitch slap, but
pretty quick,
kind of a pitch slap. Yeah. It would work. And all of a sudden it didn't. And people got offended. They got frustrated. People would disconnect from you. You get marked spam, and then you'd be in LinkedIn jail for a while. And I'm like, well, what could I do that would change this equation, that would make this process a better experience? And I don't know why, I just thought, would be really interesting if I wasn't allowed to pitch until I was asked. And so how can I be so interesting and show them that I'm interested in what they have to say, and asking good questions, like horizontal, vertical, like diving, figuring out the different topics, going deeper in to understand why they think that way, and like really investing in them, so that they go, wow, like, so what do you do?
Mm-hmm. The magic words.
The most amazing thing happened is I was thinking like, oh, like this won't happen that often. Like it'll maybe be like 5 or 10% of the time that people are going to ask. It is almost 100% of the time. The only time it doesn't happen is when I'm a boring conversationalist. Well, honestly, it's when I'm not diving into topics that are interesting to them. They're not leaning in. They're not having fun. They're looking for a means to get out because it is asynchronous conversation. But it led to vampire sales. And honestly, if you long live the vampire, because if you embrace this rule, it is the single biggest thing that increased my pipeline is by folklore, you were not allowed, a vampire couldn't enter your home unless it was invited. So don't pitch unless you're invited. Just be interesting. Start your discovery questions. Start your qualification questions. But remember, it's a conversation. So be interesting. Pique their curiosity. Make it fun. Use GIFs. Use video. Use audio. Use everything you can to make a very dynamic discussion. And if you keep investing in them and it does not take long, they always ask. So what do? Or they'll look at your profile and they'll start asking you very specific questions about what you do. And when you have that trust and credibility, that's when good meetings are booked that actually turn into pipeline, not just false hopes and dreams like corporate bros forecast meeting.
So good. If you haven't
seen it, $1.3 million.
You should. It's this. You can search it out. It's great. Just corporate bros forecasting. It's a hilarious video. And this is actually related to what Marcus was saying, is like, please don't pitch your services in the comments of someone else's posts. Don't. And here's the thing. We as humans, all psychology, all social psychology and neuroscience shows, we overweight our own success. And we take it as a lesson learned, right? And there's this famous betting example. I forget which. Kyle Williams, friend of the show, always brought this up, which is that there's this famous betting or poker player who learned the wrong lessons because when he had a bad hand, he would go all in as a way to try and psych somebody out. And every once in a while, it worked. But by the numbers, he actually lost more money than he won.
Sounds like automation for most companies.
And so we learn the wrong lessons because every once in a while, you will see somebody drop their company name or their, in the comments of somebody else's post, and it generates an interesting response or it gets a meeting book or whatever. But again, those are those all-in moments where we learn the wrong lesson, where it doesn't actually work. We might win once, but we can't repeat it or scale it. It's luck, basically, that it works in that moment. And so if you're obeying vampire sales, it just transforms your entire engagement strategy. Because now you're on the platform to genuinely strike up conversations with people, ask interesting questions, get to know them more, validate some assumptions you have about them as a prospect, and route into accounts and have a bunch of fun. Like if your DMs, frankly, I understand based on the industry, it might depend and based on the people you're talking to, like if you're selling to CTOs, it's maybe a different story. But by and large, as a part of your routing into accounts, if most of your conversations feel like you're dragging your feet through mud because you're not sending gifts or there's no emojis or it's like way too over-professionalized, like that's not the way to use the platform. Like show up as yourself. Be authentic. Your face is on everything you do. So you might as well make it look like it's you and not somebody you're pretending to be, right? That's a hard lesson. I say that being somebody who pretended to be somebody else for a long time. So a hard lesson to learn to actually just show up and be yourself on a platform.
That'd be one of my greatest fears is to go and meet somebody that I know from digital, meet them in person. I actually had this with somebody from Twitter back in the day that I met with them, and it was, you are not at all how you put yourself out online. And it was always my greatest fear because, you know, we want to put out this personal brand and we want to, I know a lot of people talk about like faking it till you make it, but that has always been my driver of like, that would be my greatest fear for someone to go and meet me in person and be like, you are not like who you are online. Be like,
no. Jeremy has an interesting question. which is, what's the compromise between pitch slapping and long-term social nurturing? Is there no appropriate, effective direct selling in a social setting now? Banger, banger of a question. I will start by saying that by the numbers, everybody has their own favorite percentage, right? By the numbers, there's always going to be some small percentage of your buyers who are in the market today. A lot of people say it's 3%. Could it be 8%? Sure. Could it be 1%? Yeah, but it's probably single digits. Those accounts, those personas are great for a direct approach, but you have to be very confident that they're the right leads. So how do you become confident? Well, first off, we've talked about this in previous episodes. Jeremy, if you want some of these links, shoot us a DM, where you need to have base level qualifications. So you're creating a qualified list of your TAM, qualified accounts that meet basic targeting criteria, growth, for example. Do you sell into growing or shrinking organizations? Do you sell in a certain territory? Do you sell when the company has a certain headcount or has a certain role or job title, or that role and job title has a certain thing in their job description? You're validating that this account is likely a good target, mostly based on your closed one accounts and also industry and prospect knowledge. That's just the base level. Tier two is triggers. Why now? If you can't answer why now versus why 60 days from now, you shouldn't be doing direct selling on social. Because if there's no urgent reason to reach out to them today versus 2 months or 3 months from now, there's no reason to reach out right now. That's simple as it is. And so triggers can be a lot of things. They could have just recently hired somebody. That's an indication they're investing in a certain function. They just had a bunch of turnover. They just brought something new on their tech stack. They just went through an acquisition or a merger. I mean, there's literally 50, 60, 70 different triggers that you as the seller need to figure out what works inside your industry for the companies that you're going after. And then once you have those triggers set up, then you can identify the right leads inside those accounts that hit those triggers that are good for a direct approach. But again, that is probably going to be 1% to 3% of your total list. So it's not going to be too much deeper than that in our experience. And the risk, let's not forget here, the risk on this is that you burn TAM.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason we're really careful about this is if you social, you can't run a sequence to somebody's connection request inbox. Okay, you got one shot.
One opportunity.
Oh, that was so good. That was so well timed. You got one shot, basically. And if that shot's not good, they'll block you, or they'll ignore you, or they'll report you as spam.
And they'll remember and will not pick up next time, or they'll tell people. Because Nate Nisrela nailed this. Like, we don't close deals. Buyers do. And so if the sentiment inside is that they hate you, or they don't like you, or they have just a bad taste in their mouth, they'll kibosh that deal faster than anything else. And so all I would say is, if you, Morgan nailed it. Like, if there is, like, pain has an expiry, you got, depending on how big that problem is with pain, will depend on how long that pain will be relevant. And honestly, the bigger the pain is, the faster they're going to want to solve it anyways. And so you only really have anywhere from 30 to 120 days on average to go and deal with that pain, and then it's expired. And so the best way is, if you see this, then maneuver to indirect. Go find people in the organization that you can comment on and build familiarity first. Do some fact gathering. Go and find that critical insight that you're drawing the lines that they just never saw, that beautiful mind. Don't you see it? And just have those good conversations. And I find that those are really good too, because they spread. And now you're getting the lurkers. Now you're getting all of the people on LinkedIn that can jump in. Jacob Tuner does this really well. He booked two meetings. One person, the person he was commenting on, the other person was somebody that was just lurking and listening. And so, yes, you can, but why would you? If you're going to go and just go direct, honestly, cold calling and emailing is better suited for that.
Mm-hmm.
If they even pick up a reply.
And just as a quick example, I'll read this out. This is sort of Nick's preferred, like, observation insight question framework. So let's say I sell some sort of training or enablement solution inside sales. I would craft an outreach that sounds something like, hey, Morgan, notice you're hiring for two SDRs. Companies your size, I mean, this is sort of packaging all of these insights together. Companies your size struggle to ramp them quickly, preventing them from being 100% effective in their first quarter. If we could help you get results in their first quarter, would that be worth a chat? And like, there's infinite variations on how to do that. That's just an example. But what that sort of outreach indicates is you know a lot about the account. Right now is the right time because there's a certain trigger and you're tying together the insights for them on their on the account itself. Sorry, I totally, my brain just decided to end the sentence.
Saw Jeffrey's right in the middle of it. Comment. Yeah. You started singing in your head some Eminem.
You better lose yourself.
Anyway. Insight. So what is your observation? Why does it matter to them? And gauge interest. That's it.
Yeah.
That works. And usually if you do that, if you're off and you do it without adding ego in, which is where some sellers go wrong, as long as you don't add ego and it's just an observation, they can confirm or deny.
Yep.
Neither interested or not. And if you leave it at that, you're not going to go and burn TAM doing that.
Right. And again, if you're only sending that out to 1-3% of your list, you're also not going to burn TAM. Where every seller goes wrong, as we were talking about earlier, is that they automate that to 90% of their TAM. And no wonder they don't see results. Okay. So mistake number 3 was pitching without being asked, which we sort of just added a caveat to. Mistake number 4 is posting more than you're engaging.
Ah, celebrity status.
Oh, don't you just want to be an influencer though, Nick?
I only post. I don't have conversations with peasant folk. These are usually the people also that write their profiles in third person. And you're like, I really love to connect with people that talk about themselves in the third person. It is very appealing. But you'll see this a lot with, and honestly, this is the biggest reason some people take off and others don't, is they get a community in the comments. The only way to earn a community in the comments is to join into the other communities with your comments. And so you'll see a lot of these like influencers that may have been something back in the day that are completely irrelevant now, is they just post and post and post and post and post, thinking that that's just going to work for them. And that's why they'll have really high followers and absolutely like horrible engagement and no comments, is because people don't want to have a conversation with a ghost or somebody that thinks they're better than them. And even if they don't think that, it's what it signals.
And even accounts that have high followers and engagement, one of the key predictors, at least what we see, is if they're struggling to generate inbound, it's not because their content is off, it's because their engagement is off. Your content can generate a lot of interest and traffic. That's great. And that will, you know, you get attention. Attention's awesome. Attention doesn't last long. There's a lot of people trying to get your buyer's attention. So the ways that you're actually circumventing what we call the brick wall, which is when a buyer tunes you out, when they no longer pay attention to you, the way you circumvent that is through engagement, not through content. Content's important. It's part of the tool belt. And it's good to post. But if you're only posting and you're only commenting on your own posts, that's a quick way to get a lot of attention in a short amount of time and not sustain the momentum in the long run. And the goal, I think, of any prospecting motion is to sustain momentum. You want to make sure that you can generate lift, not just in the next 30 days, but in the next 120 days or the next year or 18 months. And it'll be gradual, but it'll continue to ramp up. And in all of our experience, the way that that continues to ramp is when, if you're using social for prospecting, is when you continue to engage. Because that engagement builds credibility, it builds visibility, it creates a relationship with somebody, creates interest in you, and then it drives inbound back to you. And then it complements your content because now they have a reason to pay attention to you.
That's way more fun. Going through that than it is to, I don't miss the days of smiling and dialing. And honestly, like when you take this approach, you don't have to necessarily call anyone cold ever again. Everything is somewhat lukewarm because enough people will show interest. You just have to be consistent.
Yeah. And also like switch up your engagement. I noticed this. I don't know if you've noticed this, Nick, but I, for like 90 days, my comments were very insightful, I would say. They were very value-focused comments. I was trying to formulate something insightful to kickstart a conversation and like keep going. And then like 3 months into it, I was like, I don't want to do any more comments like this. I'm tired. This is exhausting. And That's where gifts come in. That's where jokes come in. That's where a simple question comes in. That's where tagging in somebody else. Like, there's so many more ways to engage than just, remember mistake number two, making it about yourself, right? You're supposed to have fun. I mean, I think, Nick, you're famous for just dropping gifts in comments and getting people to laugh or to tell a joke or add a story. Or there's so many ways more than just being, obviously, you don't want to just say, what a great post. But effectively, you're saying, like, this is really interesting. And I also considered this. Like, that's good, but it doesn't have to stop there.
Make it fun. Have fun. You know, show that you're interested. And it comes back. It's honestly that simple. Mm-hmm.
All right.
What's next?
Number five. Mistake number five.
What you got, Morgan?
Going in cold versus warming up the account.
Yeah. Being social is great on social.
You don't say. What? Wait. What? We're supposed to be social?
It just kills me every time. You're like, so you mean I don't have to just send them something direct? I can do something else? Yeah.
Crazy.
The reason we're laughing about this is, if I had to tie this to a mistake in sales, when it comes to prospecting, I think there's so many sellers that we interact with that think social prospecting works in a similar or same way to traditional channels.
And managers definitely push it.
And we don't envy that situation if you're in it.
But Morgan, the best thing for our sequence is the ghost profile look. It's the number one thing that you look at their profile, but don't say anything. And then they will always message you back.
No, they won't. They definitely won't. they don't care. Most people don't even look at it. Like, let's be honest. But the going in cold, we've sort of articulated the caveat to this, right? Which is a high urgency outreach to a triggered account based on your base levels of qualification. In all other circumstances, and honestly, even with triggered accounts, it is likely better to warm up the account. And warming up, I think, is sort of like a catch-all for engaging with accounts and obeying the vampire sales rule. So it's commenting, it's DMs, it's creating content for them, it's sharing useful things, it's like routing into the account, making them a little warm to your presence. And there's, I think Evan Patterson in particular is like really good at a specific way of doing this, the account dogpile, the FOMO play, getting everybody
swarm and inform,
getting everybody in an account to talk about you. But there are other ways to warm up the key. Well, what's your rule, Nick? It's like 5 to 10 people that you want in the account to get to know you.
Yeah, I'll go look at who are the 5 to 10 people that need to know we exist in this account, that we'd have a major impact on them getting a promotion or them getting recognized or them not having to get the call in the middle of the night when stuff goes awry.
And honestly, I think if you think about it this way, if you warm up an account, okay, and what that means, you're commenting on their stuff or you've connected with them and they see your content or you're engaging with their peers, what happens when your email ends up in their inbox? They're like, oh, I've been engaging with Nick. I know Nick. Yeah, Nick has been commenting on my post for like the last month. Or, yeah, Nick tagged me into that thing with Florence, like whatever post. Or, yeah, he's asked some really good questions. I've been really interested. And you do that, I mean, you know, 30 to 60 days. And then you send an email to the key stakeholder you've been interacting with.
Boom.
Pretty easy.
Honestly, you know what it reminds me of? Is when you go to a gym. The first time you go to a gym, maybe people will say hi to you. Especially like some of like the more clicky gyms.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You'll maybe get a hi, maybe a smile. You keep showing up, more people will go and take initiative and say, hey, after a month or two, and social does not take this long, just on a side note. But after like a month or two, people know who you are. They're asking how you're going. They're asking you about your life, hobbies, family, whatever else. That is all you're doing on social, is becoming familiar, a familiar face. And once you become familiar, you earn the right to dive deeper to ask bigger questions. And that's all the goal is just to become familiar so that they recognize you and they know who you are.
What do you think is the benchmark for that? Like, how do you think through being the familiar face? Because obviously, not every prospect is going to constantly interact with you. And maybe it's on you to sort of kickstart some of those conversations. But like, what do you listen for? What do you pay attention to?
I find people that I play the race to commonality. So when I'm just warming up, I want to see, do we have a mutual interest that I can just start conversations with, especially in comments, not DMs, so that we can go three rounds. So the rule of three, one round trip, two round trip, three round trip, and have conversations where they respond quickly, that they're interested, they're asking good questions. We have a really good dialogue. And all it is, I just want to find at least one or two people in that account. And then I'll move up the food chain or I'll change. But at least I know I have somebody I can go back to ask questions. Hey, I want to go talk to your VP of sales about this. Curious, like, is this something that's on their radar, or are they going to shoot me down before I even start? But you've earned the right to ask that question.
Yeah. I also think about, like, if I sort of like a gut check, I think I have a gut check, which is like, if I sent a DM to them on a random Tuesday, would it be welcomed?
That's a good gut check.
And it's not, I'm not looking for like 100% there, but basically, would they be open to having a conversation with me, not just about work or as something I have to offer, but like on a random Tuesday, could I send them a DM and be like, hey, what's up? Or like, did you see this article? Or, you know, this white paper just got released. It reminded me of this conversation of our conversation like 2 weeks ago. And I just, you got to see this. Like, would that be welcomed? I think is sort of like a gut check of familiarity. And if you don't have that, then there's more warm up to do outside of the DMs.
Yeah. It's that easy.
All right. So mistake number five, going in cold instead of warming up the accounts. Mistake number six, you ready for this? Creating a profile, a LinkedIn profile, that's only about your company. We see this a lot.
Yep. It's almost like a professional sports team, and you're like, people get throw the jersey on and they're owned by that company. And it's like, and we all go through this where it's like, I'm a real boy. Yeah. And after a while, that phase like wears off and they become human again. But for a little while, hopefully only a little while, everything's about that company. It's all, and it could be the honeymoon phase. It could be that's what the manager tells them to talk about. We've all been there. And so essentially your own. So there's no real conversation outside of that company and how amazing it is. Did you hear about Amazon?
Yeah.
I'm working at Amazon. Did you hear about Amazon? Did you hear what Amazon's doing? Amazon's so amazing. Did you hear about Amazon? But the problem is people don't connect to that, because unless it's relevant at that time and like they just had a good experience with them or something around those lines. Yeah, I know who Amazon is. Cool.
Yeah.
Next.
Yep.
And so once we get over that hump and we start, you know who does a really good job of this? Nick Bennett and Mason Crosby. Of just, and Jen Allen, like just being super real and transparent of who they actually are, speaking about their real experiences instead of the some of the people on LinkedIn, their faux experiences. And it just makes them, you know who they really are.
Right. Because when you meet them in person, they're not going to be wearing the NASCAR jacket of their company, right? Like, it's not like, you know, all the sponsors that like, get a, like, that's how we make our profiles so often. I think it's such a disservice because, and we've reviewed
a few
hundreds, I think, by this point. And probably, I mean, aside from some of the more visible things from a strategic level, I think that the most common mistake sellers make is they forget that they're a real person and that they're allowed to infuse personality into their own freaking profile. Like, I know Nick's giving me this look like, what?
Personality?
Personality?
What's
you're
that?
You're not just a selling robot. I don't charge you at night, Nick. You plug you
in. Hi, my name is Nick. I am here to sell.
yep, it's a problem. And I think when you craft your profile, it is a balancing act. And I will release you if you're seeking for permission. There is no perfect way. There is no perfect way to do this. Okay. It is all the cost to edit your profile is zero. So if you don't like it, you don't have to pay a toll. There's no troll under the bridge on LinkedIn. You can edit it whenever you want.
I will throw a caveat to this.
Okay.
There is a toll when you try to do it by yourself. And you're like, oh, I hate this profile. It's never going to be good enough. But when you loop other people in and get people's opinions, honestly, the best is colleagues.
Yes.
And like good customers. Hey, if I showed up in your feed, would you ignore me? Do you understand what I like? And just kind of dial, have 3 to 5 questions to ask them to give them guidance and how they're giving you feedback and just get feedback. And I find that, I don't know, the golden numbers usually for me about 8 to 10. You ask 8 to 10 people and you just feel so much more confident in your profile because you're like, okay, I'm not the only one that thinks so. Because I hated it. They said it was okay. Winning.
Good. Yep. Exactly. And I would say you and I probably edit our profiles every month.
Don't say it out loud. It sounds so much worse. Than you just say it in your head.
No, I think it's true, though. We probably change up something once a month, at least.
I'm really happy that you do that instead of trying to redo the website every month now.
Oh good, it's true. For a period of time I was really investing my energy on the website side.
That, we're gonna that leave change. It
yeah.
We're gonna learn more.
It's a little more expensive to change that up, a little more time intensive. Anyways, the main thing I think I look for is there something I can connect with you, like Nick says, a race to commonality that I can connect with you about that has nothing to do with your company. So if you read my about section, you'll find a few things at the bottom once you read all the way through that add some personality. And I actually think mine is probably a little too heavy on the company narrative right now. And I'm working on introducing more of my personality into it. I know. So everything's a work in progress. Forgive yourself if you don't do it perfectly is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's
never written in stone.
No. All right.
Number 7, is this the one and the only?
The one mistake to rule them all. Mistake number 7 is waiting until a call to do discovery.
You like held it there for a second. I'm like, you bugger.
I was building suspense, Nick. Okay. I'm trying my best.
Waiting until a call to do discovery. That this is like my favorite thing with. You go and run through you actually want to learn about software. You go in, they go in like, I want to go book 15 minutes to a qualification call. Have you never sold anything before? Like you couldn't, what do we need to qualify? Like,
and their first question is, tell me about yourself. Or what keeps you up at night?
I'd actually prefer that one over tell me about yourself.
Oh, sure. They're both bad, but it's sort of like, which one is worse? Yeah.
I don't know. There's always the one thing I have learned in sales is there's only 2 to 3 things that you get hired for at a certain company. There's 2 to 3 major problems. And with that, there's usually a couple use cases that are just perfect within reason, right? Like they're just very relevant because when you pay attention, you're doing your win loss, you'll see these themes over and over and over and over again. And if luckily your company's doing that for you, like stay there. You're working for a good company. And if not, you can do it too. And you'll see these themes happen. And so you can run with estimated guess, like, hey, you know, most of the persona that we talk to, these are the 2 use cases that they find the most valuable. Am I on the mark? Or was there something else that you were thinking about that you wanted us to talk about? Lead by example, kind of give them options, give them, I don't know, the lay of the land. Give them the sandbox to play in. Because if you give them too broad of a question, I'm already checked out when somebody says, so tell me about yourself.
I'm immediately like, oh.
You don't have internet?
Yeah.
You can't, you didn't Google LinkedIn. I know it's bad. It just, when you hear
it's
it
pervasive,
like,
I know.
Well, when you hear it like 20 or 30 times back to back to back, it's like, is there not another way?
Is there not another way? Well, and I think the mistake, especially on social, is that you can have great conversations without ever booking a call.
Yeah.
And that's where discovery in the DMs is a huge advantage or that you can play with. It doesn't happen all the time, just to be very clear. And actually, if you're using direct, like the spear approach, you're not going to do discovery in the DMs. But if you're warming them up and you're obeying vampire sales and you're being interesting by being interested and you're continuing to ask and provide value and have a good conversation, you can use that conversation to gently do discovery, right? And obviously, one of the most common mistakes we hear is like discovery becomes an interrogation. So you don't want to do that in the DMs either, okay? It's got a give and take. Coffee house rules, right? If you sat down over a cafe table and you were only asking questions and you never talked, how weird of that would be as a conversation? So why do it in the DMs, right? Give and take, ask some stuff, tell us jokes, bring in links, other things. But essentially, you're guiding down a path of doing discovery before you ever get on a discovery call.
And multi-thread.
Yes.
This is the one, like...
He's so good at this. Oh my gosh.
I wish I would have... I don't know why it never hit my radar. Because you'd go and start a social conversation. And then they get busy. As we all do. And sometimes LinkedIn's inbox is atrocious. It's really easy to lose stuff. And so you don't talk to them. But this amazing thing happened where I just started to, it was an accident, total fluke. It was a happy accident.
I was about to say it wasn't a moment of brilliant insight.
No. It was like, oh my God, that worked. But I started to have people that I knew were in the same function and they had the same workflow. So I would throw them in and I don't like having any more than usually like two or three, absolute max five, that are in that workflow. So I'll ask them a question or I'll send them a resource that highlights the problem. And then they'll start a conversation. So the other people will read it. And you have to use this, like, can't like overwhelm them. But it'd be amazing. Like two or three people wouldn't respond. And then the one person would like give you this brilliant insight that like, oh, that's why... that observation was a thing. Like, that's why I saw that. Well, now that's a way better conversation to have.
Group DMs are fun. Linking in people from the same company that don't know each other, if you're dealing with a really large firm, is great. That's where like a lot of these complimentary plays where you tag each other in comments. We've used that to great advantage before. There's so...
It works.
It works. There's
and
so
they
many...
love the gifts too.
Yeah. but again, if you come to social with a traditional sales mindset, the mindset is the distance from first touch to qualified pipeline is very short.
Book the meeting,
get them qualified, get them into pipeline, right? And in social, you're actually doing a lot of the traditional sales activities. Building credibility, demonstrating value, having insight, connecting the dots, talking about your product whenever it's appropriate, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, before the buyer is in qualified pipeline, before they actually become a lead in your CRM. And so even though the distance from first touch to closed one is that maybe the same amount of time, right? The middle point of where that lead enters qualified pipeline is a lot later on social, but that's because you've already done much of this work.
Yeah, it's buyer enablement.
You don't have to do 30 different calls. You've done that all on social. They all know you.
And they've already started to sell internally, which is the part that blows my mind, is that you've already enabled in a champion, but you've never directly enabled them. And so if you think about it this way, is how can I get them to buy the suit? Only reach out when they need help tailoring it, or it's time. Like, they're basically, if you had a buy now button on your website, they'd hit it. And that's really it. Cause especially if you have a more complex product where they need advice to really get the most value from it, that's how this social selling really plays in. Multi-thread, do the discovery, and then it really helps you go and validate that content and give them what they need without having to ask you for it. But seriously, that's what it is you're giving them access to the information to make them a better customer before they become a customer.
Exactly. All right. We're at the end of the hour. So quick little summary. Mistake one, the pitch slap. Don't do it. Mistake two, only talking about yourself. Maybe don't.
Mine?
It is like those birds though, isn't it? Mistake number three, pitching without being asked. So obey vampire sales. Mistake number four, posting more than you're engaging. Remember, all of the attention you get is temporary. It's about relationships. Mistake number five, going in cold versus warming up the account. Mistake number six, creating a profile that's a NASCAR jacket or that's only about your company. You are more than your company. I like the ongoing Pinocchio joke here. I'm really into it. And then number seven, waiting until a call to do discovery. You can have great conversations, validate assumptions, get them further along in the sales cycle without ever having to schedule a call. So those are seven very common mistakes we see when sellers use social for prospecting.
I feel like now that we've talked about the seven, I feel like next week's going to have to be how to book a meeting with anyone on social. What do you think?
I'm down. I'm ready.
Game time.
Do you want to close this out?
Ladies and gentlemen, it is 2022. Nobody should have to suffer in silence. If you're in sales, it is a stressful job. You're in marketing, it is a stressful job. CS as well. If you need help, if you feel like nobody's listening, you're not appreciated, or you just don't know what to do, please reach out. Reach out to a friend, reach out to us, shoot us a DM, let us know what's going on. We want to support you. We understand what it's like to hustle yourself into the hospital. It's not fun and nobody should be there. You don't need to buy anything. Our DMs are open. So please, if you need help, reach out, jump into the comments here and shoot some, even one of them a DM. But you don't need to suffer in silence. And we really appreciate you coming every week and joining us and adding your comments in. So thank you so much. It means the world to us.
Thank you. We'll see you next week. Yes. Bye.
Did you love today's episode? Subscribe now to have our three weekly episodes waiting for you.
And if you really like our content, please leave a 5-star review. But if you're not ready to give us a review, check out another episode and follow us on LinkedIn.
We'd love to win you over.
See you next time.
See you next time.